think about how much our culture pushes us to fulfill our desires in really selfish ways. I mean, think about the general cultural message we get. It's a message that says, whatever you want, you should be able to get, and nobody can stop you because you are the most important person in your life. That's the principle on which advertisers sell products. I mean, think about slogans that you've heard, like have it your way, or obey your thirst, or you're not you when you're hungry, or Lego my ego, nobody's going to lay a finger on my butterfinger. It's also how self-help authors make a living. They want to help you become a better you. They want you to win friends and influence people. They want you to look out for number one. I think it's why we're so crazy about sports, because we want our team to win. We want our team to be the champions. And it permeates our society. People really take that and they live it out. It's common for corporate higher-ups to get to the position they want by lying or cheating their way to the top. Politicians love a good smear campaign that just tears the other guy to pieces but makes them look great. And you have every single year, inevitably, a professional sports team that gets caught trying to cheat their way into a championship. We live in a society where if there's a woman and she lives in a trailer filled with cats, we call her a crazy cat lady. We label her and everyone avoid crazy lady. Or if there's a guy and he has a garage that's just overflowing with useless junk, we call him a hoarder. But if there's a person who has amassed so much wealth and kept so much money to himself that people around him are going hungry, then we slap his face on the cover of a magazine and we call him a leader. It's like there's just nothing unusual about that. And I don't think this is a new problem. In fact, I think this is the same problem, or at least similar to the problem that Paul is addressing when he talks to the Corinthians about being the body of Christ. Because the Corinthian church was having a hard time feeling unified. They were having a hard time sticking together because each one of them felt like they, in particular, were the most important. They thought that for a lot of different reasons. Some people felt that because of the gifts that they had. People felt like, you know, if you had gifts like speaking in tongues or prophecy or healing, then you must be more important than someone whose gift was just like teaching or singing. Because they thought if they had better gifts, then that made them more important people. Or in some cases, it was because of who they were baptized by. In the church, you saw these little kind of pockets of people start popping up that said, oh, we were baptized by Apollos, so that makes us Apollosites. Or we were baptized by Paul, and that makes us Paulites. And they thought that if they were baptized by more important people, then that made them more important. Or sometimes it was because of their ethnic background or their heritage. If people could trace a long line of Judaism in their family and they could really tie themselves into that old, old tradition, and they felt important. Or some people felt like they were more Hellenized and very Roman. They fit in really well with the culture around them, and so that made them more important. And for all these reasons, that church in Corinth was having a hard time just working together, and it seems like they kind of started to tear one another down because of that. And fast forward 2,000 years, and like I said, here we are, and everyone's looking out for number one. It's not that different. I mean, you've got, even in the church, you've got like televangelists who are on TV and they're begging people for money so that they can live in these huge mansions and fly private jets. And you've got these empire building preachers who are overseeing these huge multi-campus churches. Just last year, there was a preacher in Seattle, and he got busted using church funds to buy his book's way to the top of the New York Times bestsellers list. And those are kind of big examples, but even on a smaller level, there's a temptation for us to do that. I mean, we work really hard to garner support for our own projects, but we're not so quick to help others with theirs. Sometimes we just let our pride get in the way of telling others what the church is doing. And often, as soon as church is over, we get out of here as quickly as we possibly can because what we have going on in our lives is far more important than what we're going to experience at church. And I'm not saying that those things, that every time they happen, there's always malicious intent there. I'm just saying it's tempting. It's tempting for us to seek our own good fortune, to put ourselves before others, and sometimes to tear others down. The problem is, when we do that, when we take that cultural idea and we run with it, we forget what it means to be the body of Christ. That means that our own desires take a back seat to something that's bigger than ourselves. So there's this pull in us, there's this tension between our individual desires and the meaning of the body of Christ. There's a conflict between what each one of us wants and what's best for the whole. Throughout our series this summer, Steve and I have been looking at different biblical images of the church and kind of contrasting those with culture. So this is the analogy or the image that Paul uses to correct the Corinthians. He starts telling them about being the body of Christ. He sees the problem that's happening in the church in Corinth, and he offers two correctives for the church. The first of those correctives is that everyone might be different, but nobody is insignificant. Everyone might be different, but nobody is insignificant. The analogy turns out to be effective, I think, because he says, one, no one should feel like they're not important, and two, no one should tell anyone else that they're not important. Because like a body, just like our body, all of the members, all the parts are there for a certain reason. They each have a function and a part to play. So the foot can't be like, oh man, I sure wish I was a hand. Like, I'm just down here in the dirt and I smell bad, but the hand does good stuff. What would I give to be a hand? Or the ear can't say, man, it would be cool to be an eye. Like, I hate what I do, and it's not really contributing, but the eye helps with a lot of stuff. And similarly, no body part could tell another part that it's useless. The eye couldn't look at the hand and say, hey, you know, I think without you, we would be doing just fine. You're not bringing as much as you think. Or the head couldn't tell the feet, you know, you guys are down there in the dirt because nobody cares about you. And another point that he makes is the parts that are really important are the ones that we keep covered up. Nobody sees the parts that we care the most about. But he says all that to say that the body wouldn't function as well as it does without all of those different parts that do different things. You can try to imagine a body. It was just all feet. It was like feet everywhere. It wouldn't function, to say the least. Or if you had eyes where your nose and your mouth and your ears were, there's just eyes everywhere. Besides looking like a nightmare monster thing, you would be able to see a lot, but you wouldn't be able to hear or smell or say anything. So the body works the way it does because it has so many different parts to do so many different things. And Paul says that's how the church works. We're all smaller parts of a greater body. And no matter how you feel in that, and no matter what someone might tell you, you are important. You have a part to play, and you have a purpose in that. And in a way, that idea can be really challenging, because it tells you that there's a responsibility. God expects you to make the most of what he's given you. And it doesn't matter how you feel. God's given you something to work with, and you have to do God's work. And so it's challenging. But it's also encouraging, because it says, if you're here right now and you want to serve God, then you can do that. Maybe you don't feel like you bring a whole lot to the table. Maybe you don't feel like you are particularly talented. But God's given you something to work with, and if you start with what you've got, then God can do big things through you. And that means a lot for us on an individual level, but it also means a lot for us as a group, because it means that no one in the group could tell anyone else that they're unimportant, that they're insignificant. In church, there are a lot of different types of roles. Some of those roles are much more visible, much more public roles, like your preachers and teachers, ministers, and elders. But a lot of those roles are not as public. Many of our deacons here at Southside do most of their work behind the scenes. you've got secretaries and van drivers and pantry workers and janitors and lawn care and all these people who are doing a lot of work, but they're not really getting public recognition for that. And Paul says none of those visible, public, important roles could talk down to any of those other ones, because the whole idea that any role is more important than another is just kind of a bogus idea. I mean, if there was a ministry leader that's outside who got an idea about a new direction for ministry and came to Steve, Steve would never say, well, I'm the preacher and you're not, so I don't think so. Or if someone came to me and they had an idea about college ministry, I couldn't be like, hey, raise your hand if you're the college minister. Oh, just me. Like, because besides making me look like a huge jerk, it wouldn't make sense, because there's a person who has a unique thought process, a unique skill set. They're bringing something unique to the table. And so for me to shut them down would be kind of dumb of me. Not to mention, imagine if you had a church that was full of nothing but one of those groups, the very visible or the less visible groups. I mean, try to imagine a congregation with nothing but preachers. For starters, the church service would go on for a really long time. But there would be all these oversights. You know, who would take care of the building and the yard and the finances and things? It wouldn't work, because there would just be the one ability. Or on the other end, if you had a church that was nothing but janitors, you have this squeaky clean building, but who would do the preaching and the leading of worship and stuff? It doesn't work when you have just the one ability, because you need all those different parts. And sometimes I think we look at the church and we see the guys who are up here up front and we imagine that they're really running the show. But we forget how many people go into making all of this possible. For example, you might not think about this a whole lot, but there are people who come to this building and they clean the entire building every week. And I wouldn't call them out and embarrass them or anything, but they make it possible for you to be here in a nice-looking place and worship in a good facility. And it's the same thing on the outside. The lawn gets taken care of on a regular basis. And if that didn't happen, well, the church would just start to look really rugged. And every Sunday, there are some guys who go out and they risk their lives in those metal death traps that we call church vans. And they go pick people up who can't get here on their own so that they can be here and worship with you. You have just all of these different functions. And then outside of the church, you have people who are serving the neighborhood, who are serving the world through the pantry and through tutoring and mentoring kids and mission work. In fact, right now there are guys up there in the balcony and they're making it possible for you to hear me and for us to worship together. You got people who handle the production of the bulletin and who handle the mail and who do the finances. And I could go on and on and on talking about people who serve, but they just don't get a whole lot of recognition. So who's the real hero? Is it the guy up here in the pulpit, or is it the people who are out there like getting their hands dirty making things happen? Well, the answer to that is the hero is anyone who's doing their part to be the body of Christ. The church is kind of like a pizza. All the slices might be different, but it's all good. All these people have different unique abilities, but when they're all working together to be the body of Christ, that's what makes it work. Another way to think of this analogy is like a watch. Because inside a watch, you have all these little cogs and gears and mechanisms, and they're all doing their part to make the whole thing function. And to better illustrate that idea, I made this wall of cogs. And this thing's kind of neat, because whenever you spin one of these things, they all start working. And they work because they're all there together, they're all doing their part, and they're all working as they're supposed to. But what would happen if one of these cogs decided that it was not important, it felt like it didn't have a good part to play? Or what if a cog told another cog, you're not really that important, you're not really that useful. What you're bringing to this mechanism is not as big a deal as you think. Well, it might kind of work a little bit, but the whole thing doesn't function like it did before because it doesn't have all the parts that it needs. Because not everyone is contributing in the way that they're meant to. So that's Paul's first point to the Corinthian church. Everyone might be different, but nobody is insignificant. And his second corrective is related to that. He says, God put the body together the way he did, not so there would be division, but so that there would be care and concern among its members. Again, he says, just like our body, our physical body, when things aren't going well, we're sick or we're injured, then nothing really feels great. Has anyone ever had a broken toe? I broke a toe one time, and you would think that would just not be a big deal at all. But man, it just makes things miserable for a little while. And in a way, it's like your whole body is just suffering on account of that one little part. And Paul says, that's how the church works. We're a body, and so if one of us is suffering, then we all are suffering together. And if one of us is rejoicing, then we all rejoice together. Because we understand the importance, we know the necessity of each part, each member of the body, and so we have to care for each other. Because if we don't take care of things, then they stop working the way that they're meant to. Several months ago now, an incident happened that profoundly affected all of us because we suddenly lost access to our favorite ice cream. And I didn't know a whole lot about what had happened there until fairly recently. But I guess what happened is at the Bluebell factories, they weren't quite cleaning the equipment well enough. And that in itself might not have been a huge deal, but they didn't clean quite well enough. And then they didn't clean quite well enough again and again and again. And the end result of that was literally deadly. They hadn't taken care of their facilities, and it turned into a disaster. Because when we don't care for things, they start to fall apart. And it's the same for the church as the body of Christ. When we don't take care of it, when we don't take care of each other, it stops working the way that it's meant to. And that means we have to put in some real legwork to getting to know one another on a deeper level, to care about one another on a deeper level. Something happened to me last week that really made me think hard about this. I was walking in church over here, and I saw a friend, and I said to him, like I often do, I said, how are you? And I heard him say, not too good, how are you? And I just kind of spit out my generic response. I said, I'm all right. And for the record, he didn't say not too good. He said pretty good, so it was okay. But I thought, man, like I heard him. It went in my ears that he was not doing well. And I still just kind of like gave back the same, I'm all right, response that I would give to anyone else. And that was really convicting to me because I thought, what would I do if someone was really that open, really that candid with me to just admit that sometimes things are not too good? I think there's a fear of transparency like that. You have a fear of opening up to others. I don't know, I guess because we think we're going to bother someone with our burdens or with our lives. And then on the other end of that, we don't want to get overly involved in someone's life. And so in the event that they do open up to us, we don't quite know what to do. And we all just wind up in this awkward circle where nobody really wants to share and nobody really knows how to help. And so we just all go around asking, how are you? And giving generic answers. The problem is, we're trying to be the body of Christ, then that kind of shallow interaction is not going to cut it. That's just not the way to deeply invest in and care about one another. So I want to issue a little bit of a challenge. My challenge to you is this. Bother someone with your burdens. Share your joy with someone else. Take a chance on being there to support someone when they need it, or to share joy with someone who's joyful. Because we're all in this together, and we have to take care of each other. We're the body, and that means that when one of us is suffering, we all suffer together. When one of us is rejoicing, we all rejoice together. When we act on that, we start to grow closer to each other, and we start to grow closer to God. That kind of idea, this whole communal idea, is not an isolated incident in the Bible by any means. Through the whole Old Testament, there was this really deep understanding that each individual's decisions affected the entire group. I think the best example of that is probably in Joshua 7, when Achan breaks the law by stealing treasure from Jericho. Because as a result of Achan's law-breaking, the entire army, the entire Israelite army, is defeated. And then when they find out that Achan's the one who caused that, his entire family is stoned along with him as punishment. And in a world where every single person is trying to come out on top, that idea that one person's actions affect the whole is not a popular notion. But the reality is, nobody experiences life in a vacuum. We're all doing this together. I read this little story. I don't know if it's a true story or not, but I read this story about an anthropologist in Africa who proposes this little game to some children there. He put a basket of fruit next to a tree, and he told the kids that whoever could get to that tree first could have all the fruit for himself as a reward. And he gave the signal for them to run, and the kids all jumped up, and they held hands, and they ran together towards the tree. And when they got there, they sat in a circle, and they all shared the fruit. They shared the reward. And the anthropologist saw this, and he kind of scratched his head. He said, "Why, when any one of you could have had all that fruit to yourself, why would you share it?" And one of the kids spoke up, and he said, "Ubuntu." He said, "How can one of us be happy when others are sad?" The word Ubuntu, it's a philosophy that means I am because we are. And South African social rights activist Desmond Tutu defines Ubuntu as the essence of being human. He says, a person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming to others, and does not feel threatened when others are able and good. And it's based from a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs in part of a greater whole. And they are diminished when others are humiliated or diminished. He says it's the essence of being human, and you can't be human all by yourself. You can't be the church all by yourself, because we're all in this together. We're the body of Christ, and being his body means that we're showing love and concern for each other. It means we're loving each other with a Christ-like love. It means asking more than just how are you. It means putting in the effort to get to know one another on a deeper level. It means being open and confessional with those around us, and taking time and having patience with people who are struggling. It means being there, being open and available to people who are mourning. And it means sharing joy with someone when something great happens to them, even if you kind of wish the great thing would happen to you. It means thinking of others as more important than yourself, because you know they were all valuable, crucial components in the body. And when we act on that, when we live that out, we send a message to the world that says we are unique, we are different, we're not operating on the same principles as everyone else. And that's exactly what Jesus hopes for. Because in John 17, Jesus prays, and he prays for all who will believe that they'll be one, that they'll be united and together, so that the world will believe that he came from God. Culture says it's a dog-eat-dog world. You have to look out for yourself. Culture says you got to think of yourself before others. Culture asks us, what are you doing to give yourself a better life? But the Bible asks, what are you doing to improve the body? Culture says, you got to look out for number one. But we say, no, Jesus is number one, and we're his body. And we're all in this together. And when we show that through love and concern for each other, people are going to see that. And they're going to go, wow, there's something real going on there. It's not what I'm used to. When we act as the body of Christ, people see that and they see God at work. So we don't have to succumb to the cultural idea that each one of us needs to be the most important. God's given all of us, each of us, a purpose and a place in the body. So maybe this morning, maybe you want to join that body. You can, in just a moment here, put on Christ in baptism and become part of his body. Or maybe you just really need to know the love and care that comes from the body of Christ. Maybe you feel like you really need to be open and confessional with someone. Whatever it is, in just a moment here, our elders and our ministers are going to surround this room. And if there's anything that we as the body of Christ can do for you, go and find one of them now as we stand and sing.